This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Anthony Shadid, has been reporting from the front lines of the Arab uprisings. He's the New York Times Beirut bureau chief. He covered Tahrir Square and the overthrow of President Mubarak, as well as the uprisings in Tunisia, Libya, Bahrain, and Syria. He was captured in Libya with three other journalists by Gaddafi soldiers, beaten, and held for several days. He subsequently had to question, in perhaps a deeper way than he'd ever done before, what risks are worth taking for a story. Although it's hardly the first time he was at risk, he covered the war in Iraq and was shot while reporting on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Shadid was born in Oklahoma, where his grandparents emigrated from Lebanon. Shortly after beginning his career in journalism, he moved to Cairo to study Arabic, which he's now fluent in. His many honors include two Pulitzer Prizes. After covering uprisings for nearly a year, Anthony Shadid is on a brief vacation in the U.S. I spoke with him yesterday. Anthony Shadid, welcome back to Fresh Air. Thank you for the reporting you've been doing. And I think I speak on behalf of your readers that we're so relieved that you survived your detainment and beating in Libya. So you're on vacation now? I don't know how long your vacation is. How long is it?
It started, I guess, all of a day or so ago, and a couple of weeks at least before I head back to Beirut.
So this is like your first real vacation in a year?
It feels like it. I mean, there was some time off earlier in the year.
An extraordinary year.
It's been one of the most unbelievable years I've ever even imagined experiencing. I think back to this idea that, a generation ago, the Iranian Revolution was this one event that forever changed the Middle East. And we're dealing with, six revolts or revolutions or uprisings, however you want to describe them, but all happening in a lot of respects at the very same time.
So you're covering a part of the world that is remarkably different than it was a year ago. So stepping back for a moment, and you literally are stepping back because you've left the region for a brief vacation, are we heading, do you think, for more democracy in that region or more chaos and sectarian political fighting? Does it feel like freedom is winning or chaos is winning?
Well, I hate to say this, Terry, because it's an easy way out, but, to be honest, I'm really not sure. It's funny that you said how decisive this year feels. And I remember I spent most of the past decade in Baghdad, in Iraq, and I left Baghdad in December. And I remember coming back to Beirut, coming to our home there. And it was amazing to me how many conversations I was having with people about how dejected they were, how disappointed, how kind of pessimistic they were about where the region was, where the Arab world was. And it felt, I have to say that, sentiments felt as kind of downbeat then as in any other moment since I've been in the Middle East for the past 15 years. And so remarkably, just a week or two later, the uprising began in Tunisia. I think the euphoria of those moments in Tunisia and Egypt has passed. And I think there's no question about that. I think there's a lot of anxiety and uncertainty of where we're headed. I guess after being a pessimist in Baghdad for so long, I remain an optimist. And I think that optimism just comes from the idea that these societies that have been moribund for so long are revived or rejuvenated or are dynamic right now. And that very dynamism, I think, of those societies, still, at least to me, lends hope for the future.
Since you've covered Iraq and you've covered most of the countries that had uprisings during the Arab Spring, I'm wondering what your impression is about how Iraq, if at all, influenced the Arab Spring and whether Iraq is seen as like a model for overthrowing dictators and for democracy or as a model of like, how not to do it.
My own sense on that, and I'm sure people disagree with me, and I wouldn't want to speak with certainty by any means, but, my own sense is that the Iraq War, the invasion back in 2003 and the aftermath of what happened during the occupation, I think it actually delayed the Arab Spring. I think you can make the argument that these revolts, these uprisings and revolutions that swept the region may have even happened earlier had not this the scar of that invasion occupation been left on the region. That said, I think Iraq is still going to be incredibly relevant to what comes up in the future in the region, because I think there is a very deep and protracted struggle over identity at some level. Are these new systems of politics that emerge in, say, Egypt or Tunisia, Syria, Bahrain, Yemen, any of those countries, are they going to revolve around this axis of citizenship, or are these societies going to divide along, I think more kind of basic notions of sect or ethnicity or other notions of identity that feel very exclusive? And I think Iraq is an example of a country that did divide on those smaller identities, on sect and ethnicity. And it's very difficult in Iraq these days to have a political program or a political party that's built around a universal notion of identity.
You've been reporting on the crackdown in Syria against protesters, and Syria hasn't been allowing in journalists. So how did you get in?
Well, that I have to say, you know, that, you know, I hate to talk too much about it, to, you know.
Sure, I understand. Here's how we break your law, Syria.
But also I have to be too self-referential because, I mean, I think these, you know, these stories are, first and foremost, it's getting the story that matters and being able to report the story. But I was frustrated in not being able to meet these people that I had been reporting about for so long. I think Syria is often covered by phone. You have to talk to activists. You have to try to, you know, read the tea leaves. You have to try to get to government officials. And it is remote control reporting in some ways. And that's, you know, I think that's deeply frustrating, especially coming out of the experiences of Egypt, Libya, and elsewhere, where it was very much, you know, on the ground reporting. You could embed your writing in the stories and the quotes and the anecdotes of the people you were talking to. That wasn't the case in Syria. And a photographer, a very good photographer and a friend of mine, Moises Saman, and I decided to actually try to get into Syria. They weren't giving visas, and so we ended up finding activists who, it's kind of a lawless strip of territory between Lebanon and Syria where a lot of smuggling goes on, and these activists were working that area, and they made it possible for us to get across the border. And we ended up riding motorcycles on dirt paths from a town called Wadi Khalid to what's become, I think, a center of the uprising in Syria, and that's the town of Homs. It was just a matter of, I wouldn't say it was much more than 10 miles or so, but it ended up taking us 5 or 6 hours to try to navigate that path. And, you know, I've done things that I probably wouldn't have done in hindsight, and this might be one of them. It turned out to be much scarier than I thought it would be.
What made it scarier?
Well, I think the idea of getting caught, probably, first and foremost. I had a bad experience in Libya earlier in the year. You know, I did feel that Syria was so important and that story wouldn't be told otherwise, that it was worth taking risks for. But the repercussions of getting caught were pretty dire. And